Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Helen.
And this is the Squiggly Couriers podcast. In the next few episodes, we're doing something a bit different for the summer. And you might be listening outside the summer, and that's fine too. But we thought we would focus on some of the factors outside of work that we think help you to succeed in work. And we're covering health, sleep, which we'll be talking about today, money and relationships. And we are absolutely not the experts on any of these topics, so much so we had a debate about whether we should even talk about them and should we get guests. But in the end, what we decided to do for each episode was choose a different book to read so we could dive a bit deeper into the topic. And in our conversations together, we're going to talk about what we learned and how it's helped us. So hopefully it gives you some useful ideas for action and tools to try out, just like the rest of the Squiggly Careers podcast.
I think it's a good thing that we're not expert, because hopefully a lot of people listening don't consider themselves to be experts in this area, and they're a bit like us looking for some help. So we're all in it together.
So should we share what books on sleep we both read and why we chose these books? Do you want to go first?
Yes. So I read, Sarah can see this, I read Lifetime. This is a beast of a book. That is not the subtitle. The subtitle.
It feels like that's not going to be the quote that they'll use on the poster.
Not so much. The subtitle, the professional one, the approved one, is The New Science of the Body Clock and How It Can Revolutionise Your Sleep and Health, written by Russell Foster, who is the Professor of Circadian Neuroscience at the University of Oxford. It is a brainy book, everyone, is what I would say.
What about you? I do remember you being quite proud of yourself, and you messaged me when you finished it. I feel like it was quite an achievement.
I thought you were going to say, I remember you were quite proud of yourself when you're reading. I did not feel proud. I was like, this is a slog through sleep. And I read some of it on the beach as well. It is not really a beach book.
Well, I wouldn't describe mine as a beach book either, but it is certainly, I think it is described as accessible science in some of the reviews. I think it does what it says on the tin. So this is Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker, which I would guess some of our listeners will have read, because that book has been around for a few years. I've seen it on lots of bookshelves. It's been on my bookshelf for a while. I always see it in bookshops. And actually, I was looking at some different courses that you can take around the world. And Matthew Walker's course on sleep has been taken by hundreds of thousands of people. I think he teaches over at California, and he's been studying sleep, again, a bit like your author, for I think 20, 25 years. So really, really knows his stuff, but I do think has set out to write a book that everyone could read, even though at times I still found it quite sciencey. But I think, I wasn't necessarily the best science student at school, but it was definitely, it all made sense to me, which I think was a good start.
So maybe on the science scale, yours sounds like accessible science. And I wouldn't say mine is inaccessible. I think it might be higher on the science scale, nice way of saying it.
And one thing actually I did want to say on reading books about sleep, the reason this has been on my bookshelf for a few years and I've only read it now is I don't think I could have read this book before now. I think I'd have found it really demotivating. So for anyone who has young kids who don't sleep, or perhaps you care for somebody and that means that your sleep is really disrupted, so almost the quality of your sleep health is out of your control, I remember feeling very frustrated, borderline angry, when people would talk to me about how important it is to sleep when I was getting no sleep and there wasn't a lot that I could do about it. So I think I've also had to bide my time a bit with thinking and reading a bit about sleep, because I think we all intuitively know it's really important. But if you're not quite in the right mindset, I actually think this book would have done more harm than good. I don't think I would have been able to read it all 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Certainly not 5 years ago when my little boy was first born. And so I just thought, maybe that's not relevant for that many people listening, I don't know, but I just thought if that is you, I don't think this book makes you feel better. I think if anything, it'll make you feel worse because it will remind you just how important sleep is and then the fact you're not getting any.
I'm trying to look at my notes and just think that for people in that situation, is there, before they give up on this podcast, they're like, I don't want to listen to this either.
I would say fair enough.
Fair enough. Come back for next week's on money.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to think about whether there's other insights that I've got. So even if you feel like your sleep's not entirely in your control, is there anything that you could do differently? I think there might be. I'm a put us to the test, everybody. See if there's other things that if that isn't in your control, there might be some different things that you can do. So we wanted to start with three things that we had both learnt from each of these books. And hopefully they're different things. Sarah and I haven't talked about this beforehand, so it might be just three of the same things about sleep, but who knows? So Sarah, do you want to go first with your three things that you learnt?
Yes, and actually to your point, I think some of these things I think are interesting if you're just curious about how the brain works and how we learn. So these things, I think I just felt like I was more knowledgeable about how we learn, which was interesting. That wasn't necessarily what I'd expected to learn from a book about sleep. So my first thing was, of course, sleep is good for us in loads of ways. So memory, creativity, diet, you live longer. So there is a really long list of how sleep helps us. But I think it's more interesting when you get specific. So then I sort of tried to dive in with the three things, like, okay, specifically, like, why is it good for us? And one of the things was around memory. So we can only hold so much information in our short-term memory. He describes it as almost like temporary storage in what's called your hippocampus. That's like one part of your brain. And when you sleep, you transfer some of like what's in that short-term memory into your long-term secure vault, which is your cortex. And that sort of made sense to me. That kind of, I mean, I'm not imagining it, I'm sure, very accurately, but it's sort of, I'm almost imagining it like going in through my forehead. And then as I go to sleep, it sort of goes into the rest of your brain. And that frees up space for the next day, which we kind of all need. And he does describe sleep as essentially the save button in our brain that helps us to consolidate what we learn. And I really liked that. I was like, that save button, I think, because we've all done, you know, control S, we all save all the time. That really made sense for me as a way of thinking about like how it helps us to learn and to absorb. And he also, as a kind of side point, because he obviously does a lot of teaching himself, he talked about the difference between spaced out learning and mass learning and why spaced out learning is so important, because as the name suggests, when you do sort of little and often, you stand a chance of that stuff sort of making its way in, you know, through the save button into the cortex and sort of sticking and staying with you. Whereas mass learning, like, sure, maybe you're trying to cram and do a lot. Maybe you're cramming for exams, for example. It might help you pass the exam, but it doesn't actually help you to learn. And, you know, he practices what he preaches, so he doesn't have exams in the courses that he does. He does this kind of idea of spaced out learning because he said that's how people will actually learn about sleep. So I thought that point around sleep and memory and how they work together was fascinating.
I read a bit actually about memory, talking about these three stages of memory: acquisition, consolidation, and retrieval. And that consolidation bit, the vault, being the bit that gets most affected when you don't sleep well.
And so the second thing was that, you know, when we say to each other, and I think we actually do say these words to each other, I'm going to sleep on it. I definitely say that. That is genuinely very good advice, backed up by science. And interestingly, Matthew Walker points out that a version of that phrase exists in most languages. So regardless of sort of culture and where you are in the world, this idea of sleeping on it is good for us because it helps us to be creative and problem solve in a different way to the way that we can do when we're awake. It's almost like impossible for our brains to work in the way that they do when they're asleep. So the brain fuses together like almost disparate sets of knowledge that means that we can problem solve in a new way. He mentions a quote from John Steinbeck where he says, "A problem difficult at night is resolved in the morning after the committee of sleep has worked on it."
Oh, I love
and
that.
I was like, I just loved this idea of all these like little sleep people in my brain. And then the final thing, and I'm sure I cannot believe you've read a book about sleep and not done a questionnaire on sleep, so we'll come to that, is that sleep is personal for all of us in terms of what it looks like and, you know, what our sleep rhythms are. But there are a few things that we all have in common. So again, we're all hardwired, Matthew Walker says, to have a dip in alertness that occurs in the mid-afternoon. So whether you are a morning person, a kind of in-between person, or an evening person, mid-afternoon, really think about how you're spending your time. And I was like, that's really interesting, because for most of us, mid-afternoon is when we are working. Most people are probably working mid-afternoon. So I was connecting back to the first podcast we did in this series on walk, and I was like, okay, so is that almost the perfect time to take a walk, because it's probably not the perfect time to do any work. And he even kind of makes a joke like, never get the mid-afternoon slot in a meeting. Don't try and do your best problem solving then. Don't try and do the hardest thing mid-afternoon. So I was like, oh, that's kind of quite interesting. And I worked out that I'm actually not a morning or an evening person. I'm one of the 30% that is sort of, to be honest, like boringly in between, with a slight leaning towards evening, which I recognise that in myself. And his questionnaire, the one that he sort of recommends having a look at, which is really easy to remember, is called SATED, which stands for Satisfied, Alert, Timing, Efficiency and Duration. And we'll put a link to it in the podcast. And it's literally a kind of, do you feel satisfied with your sleep, like somewhat or very much satisfied? And you just get a score out of 10. And it just helps you to break down a little bit sort of where you might want to work on your sleep a bit more, because some of us sort of have, let's say you might be someone who wakes up quite frequently. You might get enough sleep, but maybe you wake up quite a bit, or maybe you're not sleeping for long enough, or maybe you struggle to decompress in the evenings. You know, so it's almost helps you to, it was simple and it made sense to me very quickly, but it did help me to think, okay, well, if I was going to do something different, when we get on to what might you do differently, it helped me to think, what might I do in my day? What might I do in my week? And also, what do you already do well? Because, you know, sometimes you do things well. I definitely read some things and thought, oh, I do that. And, oh, that's a good thing. And
give yourself some credit.
Well, also just keep doing it. You know, sometimes if you don't realise, then you don't know that you're doing that well. So I'll perhaps come on to some of those things when we talk next about what we're going to do differently. But they were kind of the three things that I took away for me from reading it.
So I wrote down five things, which I'm glad I did, because two and a bit of the things are the same as yours, quite interesting though. But what I like about the way that you describe...
Shows the research is real research,
right? Yeah, the research is real research. But I do think the way that you describe some of the things, some of the ways that he talked about it, Matthew Walker, it sounds like, you know, the idea of a vault and switches and things like that. It's quite a nice tangible way of talking about the science, which I think this book doesn't pretend to do. Like at no point does it need to talk about vaults and things. But the three things that I have taken away that are slightly different. So just to build on your last point about people having different types. In this book, they're called chronotypes, which I think of as that's your body clock, basically. So we all have a certain chronotype, and there are three types that people often have a preference for. So 10% of people are larks, i.e. early morning birds. 65% of people are apparently doves. So that's the people that are in the middle. So no major preference, to be honest. And 25% of people are owls. So kind of the people who have a strong preference for a more of a nighttime based chronotype. And so Sarah had said she's sort of in the middle with maybe a leaning towards an owl. I am an out and out lark. I took the survey, which is in the back of the book, actually. In this one, there's an appendix. And I was thinking, I'm not sure I need to answer this many questions. I'm a pretty clear lark. So it's maybe more beneficial for people who don't not have sure. clarity. Yeah, I was like, I'm just proving what I already know. But I did think it was quite interesting that only 10% of people are early morning birds, because it made me think, gosh, I must irritate like 90% of people, was my reflection when I go, oh, just get up in the morning, or, you know, do it earlier. That is a preference for a minority of people. And so if you are an early morning person, don't assume that other people are like you, because most of them aren't.
Yeah, Matthew Walker actually makes the point. He says how irritating it is. You know, when CEOs say, you know, there is a thing though about CEOs, like, oh, 2 hours before everyone has got up, they've already been for a run and read a book. And we've kind of talked about that before, about how that feels really unrealistic. And I think sometimes we can beat ourselves up, because maybe some of those CEOs you hear about are in the 10%. So that might genuinely work really well for us. It's a bit like Libby, who wrote Do Walk, saying, well, she gets up at 5:30 and goes for her, you know, really big walk at that time in the morning. If I took from that, well, for me to go for a walk, I've got to do it exactly the same time, then again, it just feels like something you ignore, because it doesn't feel, you know, right for
you. 9 out of 10 people to beat themselves up because they struggle to get up to go for a walk in the morning or do whatever it is the CEOs do. Yeah, so I thought that was quite, I think I maybe had a bit of an empathy about that. But the thing that I actually really took away from that insight was that you need to match your work to your chronotype for the best success. So for example, like they talked about, like people that do night shifts and things like that. So for me, I need to sort of design my day around the fact that I'm an early morning person. So if we are recording a podcast in the evening, that is never when I'm going to do my best work. So I think it's sort of trying to design your day around your chronotype as much as possible has a lot of benefits for your performance. I thought it was quite interesting. Insight on a term of social jet lag, which I'd never heard of before. It's a new term to me. So there's a whole chapter on the impact of jet lag on and sleep and performance and what you should do if you travel a lot. I won't go into that. But your social jet lag is the mismatch between when you naturally want to wake up and when you force yourself to wake up. So, you know, if you're like, well, I naturally want to wake up at 7:30, but I force myself to do it at 6 because I've got to get a train, then you can suffer from this thing called social jet lag. And it talks about when the clocks change, the impact of that on people's performance is actually quite significant. So, you know, I just dismiss it and go, get over it, clocks change every year. But actually, there's quite a lot of research that shows that for some people, you have higher levels of depression, you have higher levels of accidents, whole load of issues when the clocks change because of this social jet lag.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss. If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And the third thing that I learned was all about light and the importance of sleep and light. So basically, all of us, whether you are a lark or an owl or a dove, like wherever you are, morning light is important and everyone should try and get. So what morning looks like might be different, like the hour that you might determine a morning to be. Light is important for all of us in sort of resetting our body clock. So the sooner that you can go and get some natural light, the better it is for you and your energy, like over the day, which I thought was quite interesting. Like, do you go for a walk? Do you walk to a station? Do you go for a walk in the morning? I've even had my breakfast outside a few times while it's been hot.
Fancy.
I know how fancy. It always feels really fancy. It's, yeah. it's like going for brunch. You know, I feel like going for brunch is quite fancy.
Yeah.
And the opposite of that is you should avoid light at night. So obviously, like, you know, you hear a lot about your phone, like your phone emits a certain amount of light and there are certain, like, I don't know, some blue light.
Blue light.
You can
yeah,
get,
I learned quite that, a lot about blue light.
Everyone goes on about that. But the most interesting thing I was reading was about your bathroom light, because your bathroom is one of the brightest rooms in your house very often, because you have a lot of, like, you know, lights over your mirrors and all that kind of stuff. And obviously you're in there before you go to bed, probably brushing your teeth, and the light is very bright. And it was saying, you know, you should try and have dimmer light in the evening, get light in the morning, dimmer light in the evening. And that's something we can all do to improve our sleep.
I now feel good about the fact that my bathroom is very dark.
Like, my dingy dark bathroom is quite great for my sleep.
Yeah, it's quite dingy. But I was thinking it's not very bright.
Your bathroom.
I was like, oh, okay, well, that's quite good then, because that is the bathroom that I used to, like, brush my teeth and stuff. I was like, oh, maybe I just need to reframe it. As, like, rather than dingy, it's just like, oh, it's like resetting
me
ready for
evening.
They call
it your psychological sleep preparation. Ooh. So as you go to bed in the evening and you reduce your light, it's part of your psychological sleep preparation. So your bathroom is now part of that sleep. I don't know how bright it is in the morning, but at night you're sorted.
So let's move on to the next question. What, if anything, has it the book made you think or do differently? And I know that you said when you were reading it, you found some of it quite confronting about how much sleep you get, Helen. So anything changed in your sleep pattern or is TBC?
Well, I have gone to bed earlier, definitely. Not like every single night. And there are some nights when I'm out for work things, or I say work. I'm just out having a party.
It's like work things. That's definitely in inverted commas.
Or just out. Yeah. And then I'll get up early for work things.
Yeah, that's true. You do that.
That's true. But that hasn't changed. But I wouldn't compromise on that anyway. But there are nights when it's almost, I sort of end up, you know, you like watch Netflix or I just listen to music for longer than I need to. And those nights I've definitely more consciously gone, what am I doing? Go and get some sleep, because of what I've been reading. And I have, like I mentioned about the going outside, because it's been warmer, and I don't think I'd do it in the winter, but there's been definitely mornings when I've thought, oh, why am I sitting in my dining room? I might just go out the door and sit outside and have my breakfast. And those are two things that I've definitely done as a result of reading and reflecting on the stuff on sleep in the book. What about you?
Well, so I don't think I've done anything differently. I think there was one stat that shocked me a bit, but I'm just working myself up to whether I do anything about it, is that, did you know that caffeine has an average half-life of between 5 and 7 hours? And I quite like a coffee. I love tea as well, but I do drink quite a lot of decaf tea, so I'm sort of used to that. And one of the questions that Matthew Walker says in the book, he's like asking some questions about like, how would you feel about X or Y to do with sleep? And most of them I was like, oh, that's fine. And like, I like going to bed. And I think because I had a couple of years when my little boy was first born of really bad sleep, I think I value it even more. You know, when something's been taken away, you then realise just how great it is. But one of the questions is, can you imagine like waking up and then like not having a coffee or functioning as well without having a coffee? And I was like, no. Absolutely not. It's like, it is my, it used to be tea, but coffee is like my first drink of the day. I feel like that happens a bit when you get older, maybe. I don't know, but it definitely has become like my first drink of the day. Do I think I could give up my first coffee of the day? Like, absolutely not. I'm definitely not there yet. But I do have more than one coffee. And I was like, well, maybe a bit like I drink a lot of decaf tea. I was like, maybe as the day goes on, I could then switch to decaf coffee. Because also he says, oh, decaf coffee doesn't mean non-caffeinated, it just means less caffeine. And I was like, oh, okay, so even that's not quite a solution. And he does talk about like it like lasts in your system for so long, so much longer than you imagine. And even things like, I mean, I am going to do this straight after this podcast, like, you're not meant to eat chocolate in the evening. And I've got some giant buttons downstairs that I'm definitely going to eat after this. And I love
your chocolate.
And I really like chocolate. So I was like, I really like coffee and I really like, so I definitely eat and drink some things that could be getting in my way. And then
you're starting your day with the caffeine and ending it with chocolate.
Yeah, I go for a walk with the coffee. So it's like, do they kind of balance each other out and equal each other? I don't know. And the one other thing which I recognise, but I'm not sure I could really do anything about, is exercise is obviously really good for you and really good for helping you to sleep. But if you exercise too late in an evening, it actually wakes you back up. And I really recognise that from when I play later netball matches. So if I'm playing at, like, some of the matches are like 8 o'clock in the evening or 20 past eight. So you don't finish playing until maybe gone 9 p.m. And I find I just wake myself back up. And I always find those nights it takes me way longer to sort of decompress and go to sleep. And so, I mean, I'm not going to stop playing in those things because that's a different aspect of something I really enjoy. But I think it's probably recognizing, if you are doing that, because lifestyle wise, that's kind of what you're doing, what you could then do when you come home. So for example, then maybe trying not to eat later, actually having like a hot shower, but then letting you cool down, your bedroom temperature apparently needing to be about 18 degrees or there's at the end of the book, there's in the appendix, there's 12 tips for healthy sleep, which like anyone can access. I think it's almost by, it's like a health service list. It's not necessarily Matthew Walker's list. It's these are sensible things for us all to do. And I think actually going through that 12 is quite helpful and just being like, okay, well, I'll do that one well, maybe less so. But if I am going to go and play netball late at night, well, here's what I could do to sort of still try and help me get a good night's sleep.
I will try and dig out that list and put it into the pod sheet. So if you're listening and you're like, I'd quite like those 12 tips, please, then we will dig it out, put the link in the pod sheet, and you'll be able to access it there.
So who would you recommend this book to, Helen? You sort of sold it as quite a hardcore read, I'm going to say, at the start of the podcast. Who do you think would enjoy the book?
I would recommend this to somebody who likes facts and research, heavy, double exclamation mark. that's, so I don't, maybe that someone's listening and like, that is me. I like facts and research with double exclamation mark. If that is you, this is the book on sleep you need in your life. What about Matthew Walker's?
I would say anyone who enjoys accessible science, because I do think the majority of it is, and actually it's interesting. And if you're just curious about sleep and how sleep works, I felt like I was just learning about that generally. So even some of the parts that felt less relevant to me, like there's a whole section on sleeping pills where I just didn't know anything about sleeping pills. I've never taken them before. It certainly makes you less likely to take them having read the chapter about them. He's not completely anti them, but he just talks about like why they can be quite detrimental. And I think if you are having trouble sleeping, he definitely doesn't suggest, you know, read the book and he's going to solve all your problems. He's not sort of suggesting that. And he does talk a lot about, you know, people should go and see doctors and GPs and how important it is to do that if you are, you know, having more serious problems sleeping. But I think if you're just thinking, my sleep quality is not as good as I would like it to be, I think this book could be a really good place to start. And I'd feel pretty confident it would help you with some, at least some ideas or some things to try out.
And what about your favourite sentence or bit of the book, or something surprised you from it?
So it was a sentence, probably slightly longer than a quote. And he says, sleep provides a nighttime theatre in which your brain tests out and builds connections between vast stories of information. And I just really liked that idea of a nighttime theatre, a bit like we described that community and stress committee that comes together when you sleep. But I think the nighttime theatre was even more kind of evocative for me in terms of what might be happening, and these stories of information and this problem solving and creativity and memory storage and pressing save that was happening. That sentence just really kind of stood out to me. And I think Matthew Walker using those kind of descriptions really helped me to understand some of the concepts that at times I was probably at risk of losing my way or not quite understanding, even though it was accessible science. And I think some of those kind of descriptions kind of really brought me back into the book.
And my favourite bit is a bit actually that I think connects last week's episode on health with this week's on sleep. And it's sort of the role that stress plays. And there was just this really nice analogy of what stress is like for your brain. So I think last week we talked about Dr. Rangam Chatterjee saying that not all stress is bad. Like some stress can get back to be activating, but it's when it is sustained stress and unmanaged that becomes an issue. And in the book, he says that rapid stress is a bit like putting a car engine into first gear. It gives you an immediate and helpful acceleration, but if you leave the engine in first gear for too long, you may destroy it.
Ooh.
And I just thought, yeah, because I thought actually I kind of get that. You know, like you rev a car and you're like, yeah. Like I kind of thought, oh, I see how that affects so many things. It affects the quality of sleep. It affects some of the other things we talked about, health. And I just thought it was a nice sentence to join the dots between the two different episodes.
So we hope you found that useful to listen to and something a little bit different from us. Next week, we're going to be talking about money before we then move on to relationships. I think money is the one that we are both most scared of, probably because we both realise that I wouldn't say it's either of our fortes. Also, I reckon we have quite a different approach to money, do you think?
Yeah, we definitely do. Okay. Yeah, we definitely do.
It's going to be an interesting episode. But if you do want any of the links to the resources that we've mentioned, some of those questionnaires and those quizzes, we'll put everything in the show notes. And if you ever get stuck or you can't find something you're looking for, you can always email us. We're helenandsarah@squigglycareers.com.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and we're back with you again next week.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
I'm Andrea, founder of a boutique handbag brand, Andy, and this is why I switched to Shopify. I tried three other platforms prior to Shopify, and I remember my breaking point was when I would try to make one little change and my entire site would go down. With the drag and drop theme editor, we don't need to hire a developer to do any coding. Each theme is automatically optimized on mobile. It's incredible.
Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Go to shopify.com/listen to take your business to the next level today.